But that's what we believe, that Jesus actually does change everything for everyone. So regardless of your lifestyle choices, regardless of your level of obedience, regardless of your past knowledge, regardless of like how much faith you might have in this moment, regardless of your past, it doesn't matter what kind of family you came from or our cultural differences or even your unbelief about what Jesus could actually do, that when we actually go back to the pages of Scripture, we read recorded history of how Jesus changes everything for everyone. In fact, we find that Jesus extended invitation to every kind of person imaginable, which is really important for us, because in Colossians 1:15, Paul tells us that Jesus is the image of the invisible God. So that's really important, because that means that whatever Jesus did, that's what God would do. However Jesus would respond to the people around him, that's how God would respond to people like you and people like me. Now in John 10:10, Jesus shares his intention with you and me, and he says, I have come that they, so that's Jesus, I, that they is you and me, that may have life and have it to the what? To the full. Now, the New Living Translation says this, that my purpose is to give them a rich and satisfying life. That's where I want to lead you to. And the NASB says, I came so that you would have life and have it. I love that word, abundantly, abundantly. So Jesus says, I have come to lead you to the place of abundance. I want to give you a better way to do life. I have come to transform your life. So not just a more moral version of you. Everybody would like that, but that's not good enough. Not a better version of you. No, a transformed version of you. Not just a more biblically informed version of you, but a transformed version from you, from your heart to the outside. So Jesus says, I want to transform your mind. I want to transform your heart. I want you to follow me, and I will lead you away from anxiety and towards peace. Follow me, and I will lead you away from frustration and towards purpose. Follow me, and I will lead you away from heartbreak and towards hope. And I know you're tired. I know you're confused about what to do next. I know you have worry on the inside when it comes to your kids or your job or your finances. You might have paralyzing fear of what actually is going to happen to you next. But Jesus says, I have come. So in the middle of all of that, you can have a peace that passes understanding. Then in the middle of that, you can have confidence rooted in not in who you are and what you could do or how you're going to will yourself to a better way to do life, but you're going to trust that the all-knowing, all-powerful God of the universe can lead you and I to a better way to do life. To which you say, well, Josh, well, that sounds good, but how do I know that I could trust him? What Jesus, he gives us proof. Look at what he says next. He says, I'm the good shepherd, and the good shepherd lays down his life for his sheep. He says, you want proof that I have your best interest in mind? Just look at the cross. So let me just ask it this way. If your God is willing to die for you, is he for you? Absolutely, he is. So he just says, hey, you want proof that when life gets scary, I've got your back. Check out the scars on my back. I will become like a sheep led to the slaughter for you, in place of you. So give me all of your stress and your shame and your brokenness and watch them nail it to me on the cross. And Jesus says that to you and to me, and get this, to everyone we will ever meet, to everyone who will ever live, I'm the good shepherd, follow me, and I will lead you, and I will guide you, and I can restore you, you are mine. And I will die for you, and I will not use you, and I will never ever leave you, I will clothe you and feed you and provide for you, let me lead you. So no matter your past, no matter your pain, no matter your real struggle with unbelief, come as you are. And follow me, because I've got some good news that Jesus, he actually does change everything for everyone. And as you open up Scripture, that is true. But if you've been following Jesus for a while, I have a question for us. And it's simply this, that if Jesus promises an abundant life, then why are so many of us not experiencing that? I mean, this is for the people who say, hey, I'm a Jesus follower. Yes, I am. Like, if Jesus says, follow me because I can change everything about you, then why are we still so angry? Why are we so disunified? Why do we get so anxious? Why are we not confident that we'll ever become or do what Jesus intended us to do? Like, if it's really true that Jesus promises an abundant life, then why are so many of us not experiencing that? There's multiple answers for this. I came up with two, right? Multiple, right? But either following Jesus doesn't really work, like it never worked back then and it doesn't really work today. Following Jesus doesn't really work. Or no matter your church attendance and no matter what you say you believe and no matter what you tell people, this is an option. We're not actually following Jesus. There's maybe some areas of our life where we're not actually following. And we're not following him in these areas because either deep down we don't believe it's true, or we don't see how that could possibly work for this circumstance in my life. And so, yeah, we might show up to church, but we'll show up to church spiritually depleted. We'll show up like this patch of grass that's brown and it's dead, but it reminds me of us. Like we want to look alive, but like we kind of feel like dead, right? Right? We want abundant life, but we've got crunchy life, right? And culture has so many quick fixes, and what this lawn really needs, like, is restored roots. What this lawn really needs is nutrients and water and sun and fertilizer. It needs to be cared for, to be brought back to life, to be brought back to health. But I found this on Amazon. It's called Pristine Green, right? And what we could do in our life is just simply, like, just put a little of this on our life. And we walk around with this on our life and say, hey, it's just as good as new. It's just a little behavior modification, just a little bit of church attendance, and right? And so if you're not experiencing the abundant life that Jesus offered, let me just ask, is it possible, is it at least possible that we've just been painting our lawn? Isn't it possible, instead of actually following Jesus in every decision and every area of our life, we've just been painting our lawn to give this outward appearance? And hear me, as lovingly as you can, your life doesn't need lawn paint. You need the one who leads you to new life. And so if you're here today and you're on the edges of faith, I just want to encourage you with this. While I'm stepping on the toes of the Jesus followers, I want to encourage you, while every other religion basically says change and then you can join us, once you fix everything, once you stop everything, once you look really good like this, change everything about your life, and then you can join us. But Jesus actually says, join us, and you will change. Jesus says what you already know, spoiler alert, on your own, you can't do it. On your own, you'll never find lasting happiness. So Jesus says, join me. Put your life next to my life and follow me, and let me lead you to the place of hope, in the place of life, in the place of purpose. So no matter your sin or your struggle, join me and you will change. Because Jesus changes everything for everyone. But if you've been a Christian for a few years and nothing has changed, is it possible? You've just been paying the lawn. Is it possible that there's some areas of your life you're just not following Jesus? So let me ask it this way. Have you ever been accused of following Jesus? Has that ever happened? Have you ever been accused of following Jesus? You go to a family gathering and they've accused you of being different in a good way. They accused you of being more loving and joyful and peace and patience and gentleness and self-controlled, even at Thanksgiving, right? Does that stand out to you? Like, have you ever been accused of actually following Jesus because of your generosity or because of your service or because of your care to others? You go to work and do your coworkers notice new life or wet paint? What would God need to do in your life? What would God need to change in your life for that to be said of you? See, if you want new life, I've got good news for you, because the historical record throughout history, there's billions and billions of life transformation stories that are out there in history that proves that Jesus changes everything for everyone. But that's good for them, but what about you? What about you? If Jesus promises an abundant life, then why are so many of us not experiencing it? We really do only have two choices. Either following Jesus doesn't work and we just can pack up and go home, or there's some areas of our life that we're not following Jesus. So what we're going to do over the next couple of weeks is we're going to uncover these historical accounts of Jesus interacting with all kinds of people, regardless of their faith, regardless of their race, regardless of their position of authority, regardless of their background, regardless of their even belief in him. In fact, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, they record for us, get this, 40 meetings of Jesus and people. So we're not going to do all 40, we're going to do 5. But the 9 times Jesus initiated the conversation, so he goes to the people and says something. 25 times the other party was the one who initiated the conversation, like the rich young ruler or Jairus at the synagogue. 6 conversations were triggered by third parties, where Jesus was invited to a party and tax collectors and sinners came up, or Nathaniel invited Philip to come and meet him. And Jesus met people all over the place. There wasn't a certain place. He met them in their homes, in their synagogues, on a field, on a row. But Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John record the very same outcome, that Jesus changes everything. for everyone. And from the very beginning, Jesus extended the invitation to follow him to every kind of person imaginable. Now, you need to know that the Bible does not tell us this. The Bible doesn't tell us this. Now, the Bible, as we know it, came about 250 years after Christianity. Those first followers of Jesus, get this, they followed Jesus and were transformed by Jesus without the Bible. They didn't have the Bible as we know it. And that might be shocking to some of you, right? This might be new to some of you, but the Jesus movement does not exist because of the Bible. Seriously, the Jesus movement does not exist because of the Bible any more than you exist because of your birth certificate. The birth certificate documents something happened. And if you lost your birth certificate, the good news is you'd still exist, right? So the letters that we read in the New Testament document something happened. The New Testament documents radical transformation and true life change, all because of Jesus. And so it's not the Bible. We have this letter from Matthew, who spent 3 years with Jesus and wrote his account about 12 years after the resurrection of Jesus, around 40 to 45 AD. Mark, who interviewed people and became eyewitnesses who joined the Jesus movement later on in Acts. Luke, who thoroughly investigated many eyewitnesses, and then he writes the book of Acts, and he becomes an eyewitness in the middle of the book of Acts. So he is teaching about Jesus. He's a missionary for Jesus. He goes to prison because of Jesus, and he joins the Jesus movement. That's what that's the eyewitness accounts of Luke and Acts. And the fourth letter written by John is also written by an eyewitness who gives, the writers give us instructions on how to follow Jesus. They record the life of Jesus and they give us journal entries about the movement of God and how Jesus came to connect people back to God. That was his mission. That Jesus acts as the image of the invisible God to show up and to show us what God was like, came to connect people he loves back to him, the people that were lost back to him, the people that he would suffer and die for back to him, and they radically changed their life. But because of the fierce persecution for so many years, for the first 250 years of Christianity, there was no collected work called the B-I-B-L-E. No, there weren't. There was a lot of events. There were missionary trips. The picture's not centered. There are a lot of different documents. They're written from different places at different times, written by different people. There were letters written by eyewitnesses who were living during the time of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Today we have a piece of the copy of the Gospel of John dated to 125 AD, just roughly 35 years from the life of John. So the historical reliability of these letters we find in the Bible blows other historical works away. We have 5,824 copies, complete copies of the Bible. We have 24,000 partial copies. We have reliable copies of what the eyewitnesses wrote. They're all sharing the same message, that when Jesus' life puts next to another person's life, he changes everything for everyone. And for the first 250 years of Christianity, in the middle of fierce persecution, hundreds and thousands of people became Jesus' followers. Hundreds of thousands of people experienced life change without the Bible as we know it. They had a copy of the letter of John or Matthew. They had a visit from Paul. They had a scrap of Luke or Mark. And they record how their lives were changed and how their lives were transformed. And what we are taught when we pick up the New Testament is that you can take the craziest life that you can think about and put it next to the life of Jesus, and you will discover that he changes everything for anyone and everyone. And that means that option number one is actually taken away from us, that it doesn't really work. In fact, think about a person in your life that you think they would never follow Jesus. Someone that maybe seems too far gone, someone that you would maybe be scared to share with the life-changing message of Jesus. Think about that person in your mind. It's the kind of person that we're going to study today. We're going to discover that when you take the craziest life and put it next to Jesus, there's a shift. There's a change. There's a shift in their heart. There's a shift in the way that they think. There's a shift in the way that they see the world. Some might call it a holy shift. But you can put the craziest life next to Jesus, and you will see transformation. So if you're here today and you question, can Jesus really change me? Is this really for anyone and everyone? I'm excited to share with you one of the most bizarre accounts of life change. In fact, it's so bizarre that three of the Gospels include this account. Matthew, who was there. Mark, who got his information from Peter. Luke, who thoroughly investigated the events. He's like writing this thing. He's like, this is so crazy. I can't leave this out. So if you have your Bible or mobile device, turn to Mark chapter 5. Mark chapter 5, verse 1, it says this. It says, they, the disciples, Jesus and his disciples, went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. How would you like that greeting? Right. The New Living Translation says a man possessed by an evil spirit. He came from the tombs to meet Jesus. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. And so Mark is recording a guy who's trapped in a graveyard. There's dead grass on the outside, and everybody knew it. There's no spray paint, no hope, no growth, no life. And he's crying out, wanting a better way to do life. Now, I read that and think, well, what are you going to get out of this? Because you're probably not demon-possessed. Probably you're not laughing. I kind of hope. Right, but you might be thinking, Josh, you should have picked a different account. Like, I'm nothing like this naked crazy man, but I think that we have actually something in common with him, because we all have that moment in our life, or will have a moment in our life, where what we will face a challenge or a difficulty where we believe, oh, it's always going to be this way. It's never going to change. I'll always struggle with that. It won't happen for me. This is my life. I mean, you don't find yourself cutting yourself, running naked through graveyards because you have a hope that things are going to turn around. Like, that's just not what goes through your mind. So what's crazy is that we have that in common with this man, but we also have something in common with a flea. So a few years ago, there was this study done that said that an adult flea, like you get on your dog, an adult flea is about 1/8 of an inch long. They're these tiny little fleas, but they have the ability to jump up to 36 inches. So if you do the math, it's like, hey, 200 or 300 times their height. If you can jump 200 or 300 times, if I could do that times my height, I could be able to jump about a half mile. So here's the thing about the fleas is that you can take the flea, and it has the ability to jump 36 inches, and you put that flea into like an 8-inch mason jar, and if you put the lid on it, guess what you'll do? It'll continue to jump and throw itself against the bottom of that lid until something clicks in its little flea brain. All right? And when it keeps hitting his head on his little flea brain, he's like, that's not smart. And so the study said that they'll keep jumping and jumping and jumping, but then after a while, something clicks, and they'll jump just short of the 8 inches because something tells them, that's all I've got is just 8 inches. Now, I don't know how it works in flea world, but if this little flea meets another little flea and they have baby little fleas, like, I don't know. But even though they have the potential to jump 36 inches, that if they're born in this jar, they'll just look at what their parents have done. And even though they're capable of jumping the 36 inches, they'll only try to jump 8. Now some of you are beginning to realize I'm not just talking about fleas here anymore. And here's the crazy part of the study, that is, if you were to take the lid off the jar, they say the flea won't even try to escape. That even though they could escape, it doesn't try. Why? Because like you and like me, like that crazy demon-possessed man, they've settled for, they believe that this is all their life was ever going to be. But we're going to see in a moment how Jesus can change everything for everyone. So before we get to that, I want you to know that you have a choice, that you get to decide, do I want what Jesus has to offer? And just so you know, your first response isn't going to be yes. See, the reason I can say that many of us, and I'll include myself in that, many of us don't want what Jesus has to offer is because so many of us just sit in our brokenness. Sit in our broken bodies, sit in our broken marriages, sit in our broken families, sit in our broken careers, our broken friendships, our broken finances, our own addictions, and in our broken relationship with God, we've just been sitting in this 8-inch little jar just too long. And we've concluded, okay, that this is probably all I'll ever do. This is how it's always going to be. This is how my family's always going to be. This is what my marriage is always going to look like. This is how my sexuality is always going to be. There seems to be this lid on my life, and I'm trapped. Anybody feeling that? And so some of us, like, we try to blame others. We play the victim. We play the martyr. And you know what? You're right. They did something wrong to you. But the trouble is you never got over it. You never take an ownership on that really important truth that this is your life. And I know you wish it were different. I wish you could snap your fingers and change everything, but this is your life. And when we hear that, we get defensive. When we hear that, we feel judged. When we hear that, we begin to assign blame, and we think, well, my life would have been different if they had held up their end of the deal. If I had a better job, if they hadn't got sick, but it happened. So that means this is your marriage. This is your family. Those are your parents. These are your kids. This is your body. This is your money. This is your debt. Those are your hobbies. Those are your habits. Those are your addictions. This is your life. And at some point, you and I have to wake up and realize no one is coming. No one is going to wave their magic fairy dust wand to fix everything in your life. No, you will have to make the difficult decision to take the difficult steps to actually follow Jesus. That if we really want what Jesus has to offer, that means that you and I are just one decision away from a better marriage. But we just sit there. We're one decision away from becoming the parents that our kids actually need, but we just kind of pull back. We might just be one decision away from life-giving faith, but we settle for painting the lawn. And the question I'm really asking is, what do you want? Like, you have to answer. What do you want? Do you want to be a flea in a jar? Do you want to spray paint the dead parts of your life for the rest of your life? Or do you want to go where Jesus is actually leading you to new life? What do you want? In Mark chapter 5, we see Jesus as the image of the invisible God showing up to a man who thought he was trapped. And when we turn there, we don't just read the Bible. I want you to envision the Bible, right? So this is an eyewitness account. So I want you to imagine you're on a morning walk here in Franklin. Right, you're walking your little doggy there in the Green Lawn Cemetery here in Franklin on the walking chairs, and a naked, crazy, screaming man runs out in front of you with ropes and chains hanging off him, running at you in the cemetery. I'm telling you, if that was true, your doggy's doo-doo isn't the only doo-doo you might be picking up. He's living amongst dead bones. He's absolutely been kicked out of society. They believe he is demon-possessed, to which you say, well, what does that even mean? Well, I want you to turn to what Jesus had said to the disciples. He said, this man is hurting, and he's cutting himself, and he cries out. Why was he crying out? Well, there's bits of rope and chain tied to him. It's because if you're, you know why that happens? Because if you're going to do a funeral in the town, you had to tie up the naked crazy guy. You didn't want him leaping over grandma's casket. Just would ruin the mood. Right? It might change your last memory of grandma. So here's this crazy guy and the disciples, and they found this strange figure screaming coming out of the tombs, and he says to Jesus, is strange. He says, he shouted at the top of his voice, what do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? And maybe that's your hang up with Jesus. Maybe you don't want to follow Jesus because you're scared about what he might do to you. And he says what you might be thinking, in God's name, don't torture me. Maybe that's, we don't know Jesus' intentions. But I want you to pay attention to the voices he listens to. Because Jesus says that this man really wasn't speaking. Mark, who got his information from Peter, who was there, said it was the demons. The guy had lost control of the voices in his head. He says, the demon said, my name is Legion. He replied, for we are many. Now, legion means platoon or group, or legion means multiple. So all of these demons are inside this guy. My name is Legion, for we are many. And he begged Jesus. Now, I think someone needs to hear this. Demons beg when Jesus is around. Demons beg, Jesus commands. So verse 7 says, a large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside when demons begged Jesus, send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them. Right, and that's pretty crazy what's going on here. This is a large herd of pigs. Go to the next slide, please. The herd, about 2,000 of them, rushed down the steep bank and the lake, and they were drowned. So can you just picture this herd of pigs and the demons throwing themselves into the pigs and the pigs running off and jumping in this lake? And this is not natural. This is not normal. Some might call it swinicide. So those tending the pigs that day ran off and reported this in the town of the countryside, and the people went out to see what had happened. So we have these pig watchers. not the owners, but the pig watchers who experience the day when pigs fly, 2,000 piggies leaping to their death. So can you just imagine, like, if you're a pig watcher trying to stop them, like, do you run beside them for a little while? Do you, like, move out of the way? But in the next moment, they're looking at each other, and they stand in this amazement, and they saw them leap to their death, and they draw straws on who's going to go back and tell their boss. I would have loved to have been in that meeting. Right? Because you, where the pig herder says, well, boss, we have no idea what happened. Everything was swine. I mean, everything was fine. But the big one went, and they all went over the hill, to which the owner said, well, did you lose them? No, we didn't lose them. They're all floating in the lake. Actually, that's a pig pontoon bridge out there. We can walk all the way across to Joppa. I mean, how do you picture the Bible? Probably not like me. So back to the account. The news spread throughout the town, and everyone is saying, I have to see this. I mean, if you were in town, would you be like, there's no Netflix. Like, I've got a show. I got to see this. So what happens next stops them cold in their tracks. And it's not the pig. It's the man. It was a man that they knew. A man that was dressed and in his right mind. This is when they came to Jesus. They saw the man had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there dressed and in his right mind. And they were, what's that word? Afraid. Now, why was that shocking compared to the pigs? Like, why did Mark even include the detail about the pigs in the account anyway? They look at the pigs and think, well, I've never seen anything like that. But then they turn to this guy that the only one that they know is crazy and dangerous and demon-possessed. And they think, well, I've never seen that kind of life-changing transformation power before. That's why they were afraid. The only thing that I can think of is the main reason they were afraid is because they knew him. They were the ones who had tied them up in chains. This was the village where everyone knew he was crazy. And their response to Jesus shocks us today. It says they turned and began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. Jesus, you have to leave. And can we blame them? The pig disaster sounds kind of funny. That's one thing. But when the visual reality that Jesus can change everything for everyone, even a demon-possessed man, that kind of transformational power is actually scary. And what's interesting is I want you to notice Jesus' response back to him, and it could be his response to you today, that Jesus doesn't argue with these people. Jesus doesn't say, don't worry, just come follow me. Jesus doesn't say, you're going to be sorry. No, he simply says, you don't want me? Okay, I won't force you to follow me. See, this might be why you're not experiencing the life change that Jesus promises. So Jesus tells the boys to get the boat, and as Jesus is getting in the boat, check this out, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. The man formerly known as demon-possessed for a second time begins to beg Jesus. Now, the shocking thing to me is that Jesus, loving Jesus, does not say, well, of course, Pete, scoot on over, get in the boat, let's make the room, we're going to sing Kumbaya together on one. Like, that's not what he records. Look at what he records. Jesus did not let him. Can you imagine that? Jesus says no. And to make it worse, what Jesus says next is to this guy did not want to hear. Jesus did not said no, but go home. I want you to go home. Let that word break your heart. He had a home. Some have looked at this text translating and saying, hey, that word means more than a home. Because when Jesus says, go to your own home and your own people, some suggest that he had formerly been the head of his household. Now, we don't know that for sure, but just think about that for a second. Think about what Jesus is telling this guy to do. I want you to go home, and I want you to go to your own people, to which he says, Jesus, do you mean like home? Back to the village where I ran naked all those years? Back to where I embarrassed my family? Like, you want me to, like, leave this place and go out to my car and leave the church and go back to where everyone knows my mess? Why, Jesus? I want them to see real life change. I want them to see real transformation. I want them to have hope that their life doesn't have to be like this. But the man, he begged to go with Jesus. And I just want, do you blame him? I mean, do you blame him from not wanting to go back home where everybody knew his stuff? Yeah, I mean, if you've ever been known for something and you wished you weren't known for that, the jokes, the ridicule, the embarrassment, And you're thinking, that was just a decision. That was just a crazy moment. But what if you had terrorized a town for years? What if you had hurt people in that town and that's why they tied you up? Could you imagine going back in that town? What would you tell the families? What would you say? Let me tell you about Jesus. No, you wouldn't. But Jesus doesn't give him an option. He gives him a command. Go to your home and your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. See, we have recorded history. No matter your hurt or your habit or your hang-up, you could even be demon-possessed. But Jesus changes everything for everyone. It's true. It works. And so the reason maybe you're not experiencing life change, is that possible? It's because we're not actually following Jesus. That if Jesus did it for him, here's my embarrassing question, what's your excuse? I mean, why aren't you experiencing life change? And so for the whole series, we're going to have a set of three challenges depending on where you are in your walk with God. If you're not a Jesus follower on the edges of faith, I want you to know, no matter your struggle, Jesus will extend an invitation to you. And so I'm just going to ask, hey, would you like pray and ask Jesus to show up in your life this week? Jesus says, join me and you'll change. So would you just pray, God, I don't even know how to do this or if I even believe all of this, but would you, if you're real, would you just let me sense your presence this week because I want to try to join you in my life. So would you make plans to just pray that way this week? And would you make plans to come back here next week? The challenge number two is if God has changed something in your life, and I know that's true of many of you, Jesus actually said, go back to your own town and your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you. And so here's the challenge for you. If God's changing stuff in your life, share what Jesus has changed for you. Now, I love how so many of you have actually already been doing this. I never planned this, but when we posted this graphic out on social media, I started seeing people comment, and they would share this. Jesus changes everything for everyone, and here's the crazy words they put. I'm proof. I'm proof. And that I love that. It inspired me. In your notes, we want you to share your story, right? So we want you to go to the story, and we want to hear stories of life change. So we'd love for you to click this in the link or in your notes. And about 3 years ago, we did a study back in 2020, and we said a new me by 2023. And guess what? It's almost 2023. So we want to hear about what God has done in you and maybe through you these last 3 years. And do people notice? And if that's you, I want you to click the link. The third challenge I have is if nothing's changed, you need to figure out why not. If there's an area of your life where you're experiencing dead grass and don't want wet paint, where do you want God to take the lid off of your jar? Where maybe are you not following him? Because the truth is that Jesus does change everything for everyone. I mean, can you go back to that day? I just imagine that day where you hear a knock at the door and it's like, Mom, it's Dad. Sweetheart, go get your sister and go to the closet, hide. I'll get my broom, don't worry, like I won't let him hurt you again. Can you just imagine that moment where he actually goes back to his town and goes back to his door and she's like, Mom, it's Dad, he's got his clothes on, right? He looks different. And I don't know if there was a moment where like she hid behind the door and maybe she opened up the door and she locks eyes with him and he just says to her crying, sweetheart, they're gone and I'm back. I mean, what a moment of relief. And she has to ask, well, how did that happen? And he would have told her, I met Jesus. I met Jesus and he restored me. I met Jesus and he gave me this new life. He erased my shame. He healed me from the inside out. And I love how this account ends. So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis, that means the 10 cities, the whole region, how much Jesus had done. And all the people were amazed. I mean, can you imagine that? I have to tell you that Jesus changed me. I have to tell you that Jesus wants to change you. And I love this account because it's not just his story, not just my story, it's our story. So what if we learned from this man who didn't negotiate with Jesus, who didn't try to play games with Jesus, who didn't try to manipulate Jesus or cover up his mistakes? What if we learned from the man who met Jesus and experienced a shift in his heart and in his life? In that moment, a man who encountered Jesus and decided to move past what can God do for me and move past what can I get out of it and accept the difficult invitation to be a part of what Jesus was doing in the world. Because Jesus came to connect people back to God. What if after he changed you, He wanted to use you to give hope that only Jesus has the ability, only Jesus has the power to change everything for everyone. Would you pray with me? Father, just thank you so much for this account. I thank you that we get to see how God would interact with people who are so far away from him. Father, so many of us may be painting our lawns or trapped in jars, but we want something different. We want something more. And so, Father, through the course of this series, may you reveal to us the areas of our life where there needs to be new growth, life change, real trust placed in you. Father, would you help us to recall the stories that where you have transformed our life in the past. And Father, if there are people here today on the edges of faith and they're asking God, will you show up? Father, I pray that the promise that we have in Scripture is we draw near you, you'll draw near us. Father, I pray that they experience the truth of that promise this week. Father, just thank you so much for the sacrifice of Jesus and the heart of Jesus that we find in this text. In Jesus' name we pray.